Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, since we got fruity and nutty in the first segment, let's have a...
let's move to some other stuff.
Yeah, let's get a little more serious here in the second segment. So we're talking about cooking for autumn, all the things that when October hits and the light has changed and there's a little, you know, you can see the beginning of the leaves changing and all that sort of business. So what are all the other things on your top 10 list of things that you want to eat?
Well, we just received our first white truffles, and this is a very short window.
That's early.
And they were small. They did offer us some that are a little bit larger. White truffles are unbelievably expensive. And
let's talk about it briefly. Because it costs a lot of money to buy white truffles or black truffles.
Mm-hmm.
So a little quick primer. What do people expect? What is a white truffle? When should they come? Where are they coming from?
Okay, so white truffles coming from Alba, Italy. From that region, and it's usually a three to four week window. And they are a white truffle is white or creamy on the outside and sort of light, almost light brown and white on the inside. They can almost have a blush tone to them on the inside as well. They're variegated inside. They're very beautiful. And a white truffle does not have the hard exterior kind of almost shell. It's not really a shell that a black truffle has, but it almost feels like a shell on the outside on a black truffle. The white truffle is really actually softer.
Because it's a vegetable. It's actually related to Jerusalem artichokes. It's not the mushroom that a black truffle is. And white truffles, you figure from now, beginning of October till, what, Thanksgiving time maybe?
Yes, now for 3 to 4 weeks. And they have inherently a garlic perfume to them, but it's subtle. And you may not even recognize it necessarily as garlic, but white truffles are very, very particular in flavor. There is, other than that maybe garlic tone, there is really no way to compare them to anything. They are their own thing. And the perfume of the truffle as well as the taste of the truffle is as desirable. So you need to capture that. And if you are able to get white truffles, you want to keep them in a glass jar, not something plastic. You don't want the container to absorb any of that perfume or flavor.
A lot of Piemontese just keep them in arborio rice, so the rice takes on the flavor.
Right, but then the rice will leach the flavor and the perfume, so then you really need to serve them with that rice. That is very typical, and also because they don't want to be in too moist of an environment, the rice keeps the environment dry. So that's another thing. It helps prolong the life of the truffle. But they're amazing to work with, and because they are so expensive and really more desirable, very thinly sliced. They go a little bit further that way, but that's nice. And I also make...
Twice the price of black truffles.
Or three times. Yeah. Or they can be three times. I mean, I've seen them where they were $3,200 a pound.
And they don't have
wholesale.
The crunch that the black truffles do.
Not as much. They do have a tiny bit of crunch, which for that reason I will... I'm serving carne crudo with it right now, so we get this amazing veal from the northern part of New York, and it is fantastic veal. So, and it's gorgeous, and it's humanely raised, and I mean they're doing everything right raising this animal, and it shows in the meat. And carne crudo is raw, hand chopped veal, and you have to have a very, very sharp knife. You don't want to bruise the meat. You want to really chop it, and so it's a clean cut. And then I mix it with, I'll do almost a brunoise, which is the smallest of dice of the truffle. It may even be smaller than technically a brunoise, and put it with corn oil, which is a neutral oil. And then that's what I toss in with the hand-chopped veal, a little bit of really good aged Reggiano and salt and pepper, and you don't need anything else. I mean, it is perfection. I will garnish it with a chiffonade of arugula just to give it a little heat and a little bit of almost herbaceousness
A little bitter to offset the sweetness of the meat.
Mm-hmm. But it's so good, and it's such a, you know, we've had that many times on our trips to Italy, and, you know, of course, there they may have found their white truffles. So they'll just slice all these slices on top of this carne crudo and just like, oh, God, I wish I could do that, you
know? $700 worth of...
Right, but they found
of tuber on...
and it's, I mean, it's just the perfume is so... Yeah. It's just so... beautiful.
It's a little intoxicating.
It is. It's intoxicating. It's lovely. And they are beautiful to look at, too. So when you work with them, but with a black truffle,
You may be projecting olfactory beauty to a little gray-white tubers being beautiful, but I understand that.
black truffle, the Melanosporum, which is the black winter truffle, typically from the southern part of France, although they do come from different parts of the world, is a very different thing. It is a mushroom. It does grow in the root systems of particular trees, and it has a very different taste.
It's almost like instead of that garlicky, like you know it's a vegetable somehow sort of thing, mm-hmm. it has an almost mineral sort of an aroma along with the rest of the sort of perfume of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're basically really two completely different things. But anyway, so we celebrate the white truffle this time of the year. And we'll probably start to see the black winter truffle maybe the beginning of December, maybe the end of November. It depends on the year. It depends on the weather and how much rain and all that good stuff. So,
okay, so white truffles. What else is on your list?
I also think of oysters this time of the year. And, you know,
It is the time to get excited about them.
Yeah, sure. The water still hasn't, our local water certainly hasn't cooled down. Southern Virginia, you know, the southern part of the United States obviously hasn't cooled down that much. But the northern part of the United States, I mean, getting oysters either from the northern part of the West Coast or the northern part of the East Coast, this is the time of the year you start to think about really getting gorgeous oysters.
Yeah, because you think of Chincoteague like a Christmas, that kind of time.
Yeah, our water's still warm. Not of course you can get them, but I tend to think of the northern part of the country, and with oysters, you know, of course, oysters on the half shell, and however you like them, whether it's with lemon, horseradish, whatever.
Malpex this time of the year.
I love malpex. I love and also Bailon oysters from Europe if you can get those. Or
so what's your favorite classic way to serve oysters right now? What's your favorite really strange oyster dish that you thought that actually worked?
We will serve oysters with caviar on them, and I think that is probably could be considered strange. I don't know. I don't think it's strange, but it's certainly different.
Sounds
and it is
pretty gosh darn good for a glass of champagne.
Right.
That's what that
so
is.
We serve them with Ocetra caviar. My favorite is mignonette. I will always be mignonette, which is French, which is red wine vinegar, a very finely chopped shallot, and a little bit of cracked black pepper. And it's just, I never would have thought before the first time I ever had that on an oyster that I would like it. I also like Tabasco on an oyster. I can't help it. I did live in the South when I was a kid. And also, I'm used to oyster roasts in the South where you would have, Tabasco out on the tables when you're roasting your oysters. So eating them hot that way, I love Tabasco on them hot.
And so now the thing that one of the things you're most famous for is how well you fry an oyster. And I've had fried oysters in an awful lot of places. And a lot of times people have these crispy little rocks that used to be oysters.
Overbreaded.
What do they do?
Either overcook them or they overbread them. And obviously you do it to order and you don't want to pre-do something like that. What I do is I marinate mine in buttermilk for no more than 24 hours. So they come out of their liquor and go into buttermilk, and then we put them into a mixture of cornmeal, all-purpose flour, a tiny bit of salt, and a tiny bit of cayenne pepper.
And they're just dusted with it.
And we only fry them. We buy oysters select. So they're a smaller size oyster. I don't really like huge oysters to fry, frankly. Actually, I never like huge oysters.
It's nice to have one complete package and a bite, kind of.
Exactly. You don't want to do the two-bite thing.
Two, 3 bites, yeah.
Yeah, it's a little, ugh. But... and we cook them about, because of their size, we cook them about 35 to 40 seconds. And that is, 350 degrees fryer oil, and that's peanut oil, and it's got to be fresh. That's the other thing, when you're in a restaurant and you're cooking, 20, 30, 70, 80, 100, 200 portions of something, and you're using your fryer oil, it's got to be fresh. It's got to be clean. And that's another big aspect of frying food, as well as temperature and the way you bread things. And the freshness of the product.
All right, so we have fruits, we have nuts, we have...
Well, one more thing about oyster, actually.
Oysters.
I love, we all love rockfish, I think, in this region. And I have, in the past, made a sauce with a couple of different sauces. I'll make etouffee with oysters in it. So etouffee is very Southern, and it's just really onion, some kind of good pepper. I use poblano peppers in this, although a Southerner wouldn't. They would probably use a bell pepper, something like that. Onion, celery, shallot, peppers, and then add light chicken stock to it, or you could add seafood stock to it, thicken it with a light blonde roux, spice it up with some Creole spice, dried thyme, dried oregano, dried basil, a little bit of cayenne pepper, black pepper, and salt, and just make your etouffee sauce. And then I would poach my oysters in the etouffee, serve it with a really, really well-made rice and something neutral like Tabasco-scented rice or lemon-scented rice, you know, just something that's well-executed but neutral, and then serve it with a grilled or pan-roasted piece of rockfish. And, you know, you would just poach the oysters in that etouffee on pickup. That's a great way to eat oysters, too. And really
poach
enjoy.
For what? A minute, 2 minutes?
Oh, 30, 40. Again, you're
just,
talking
40. Just long
if
enough
your
to get
sauce,
them warm.
Yeah, if your sauce is up, you bring your sauce up to a boil. Then you drop in your oysters, literally, I'd say 30 seconds. If they're immersed in that sauce, it takes no time. And then that liquor perfumes your etouffee sauce, which makes the etouffee even better. So that's a great way. And another way to cook oysters for fish is to poach them in cream with leeks, a little bit of salt and pepper, maybe a little bit of pinch of cayenne. Very simple. But again, it gives the oyster a chance to perfume the cream and to cook gently and have that little bit of leek flavor. Oysters and leeks go together really beautifully. A great piece of fish.
And you will have wanted to poach those leeks for a while before to get that flavor in the cream so that you can marry those, because the oyster is not going to need that long in there. But the leeks need a bunch of time to
The sauce needs
get
to be
the
made.
Flavor out to not be too hot.
Well, you know, I start to think about scallops again. And you know, I don't know how readily available they are in the markets, but this should be a window of time where we should be able to get some great scallops in. So I'd like to...
Maybe even scallops with roe would be nice to have.
Oh, that would be great. And, you know, those are simple. I mean, what would you like to do with scallops?
Well, you mentioned the truffle. I mean, honestly, when Christmas comes, I mean, it's one of the ultimate things to me is to have scallops with black truffle and just simple beurre blanc with the roe.
So good.
And, you know, and out of and roast it, hit it with the, and season it, roast it. Seasoned with just a little bit of mirepoix and maybe even a little tiny drop of fish stock, a tiny bit of butter, roast it in the oven, and, you know, with the roe. When it comes out, hit it with a little beurre blanc and a fat slice of black truffle and leave it at that.
I was also thinking, because this is great grilling weather, you know, it's so nice to stand outside.
Oh, just to grill the scallop out of the shell.
Grill them out of the shell. Maybe skewer them, put a little bit of bacon pieces in between.
Scallops have that corny kind of flavor. One of the things on my list to cook is pumpkin.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, maybe grilled scallops with pumpkin would be an interesting thing. I make pumpkin gnocchi. I like very much to roast a whole, whether it's fairy tale or even a rouge pumpkin. You see all these sort of unusual, people will call them heirloom pumpkins, or they all have different names, no sort of odd farm names. The rouge are the ones that are really sort of almost like a comic book or a scary children's book orange pumpkin, not a jack-o'-lantern. But
they're the one with the bumps
flatter.
On them?
Flatter. They have bumps. Yeah, they're flatter, yeah. That kind of thing. That, and they have really, really, the flesh that almost looks like supercharged carrots. And that stuff, if you can slow roast that in its jacket and then mill a little bit of that and mill it with potato and make gnocchi with that, is fantastic. Now that with grilled scallop is
that sounds really
as
good.
A garnish might be pretty fun.
And you could
fun.
Still add a little bacon to that, because that would be a good flavor for it too.
You would not be a Southern chef if you didn't add bacon to most things. Be realistic.
I told one of my cooks yesterday she better put that cooked off bacon away, because I was going to eat all of her mise en place. I'm like, good move putting that away. She was like, yes, chef, you're from the South.
If I wasn't doing scallops with that gnocchi, and that's one of those things. I mean, making pasta, making gnocchi, something like that is so contemplative. Sometimes I like to keep it as simple as we possibly can. And you're talking about nuts. You could certainly toast those walnuts and have and add them to a little bit of brown butter and fresh sage and just dress the gnocchi with
that. That sounds like you. That's a definitely Tony Foreman dish there.
Well,
that sounds good.
Well, take all
but you love sage, too. And that is a beautiful flavor profile for all that. For all that food, that would be delicious.
Well, let the sweetness be the sweetness of the earth that comes with the pumpkin, you know. That's for sure.
So scallops, if you can find them. And then I can't wait to get seps, porcinis, call them.
There's what I want to cook on the grill in the autumn and just serve a great big plate of it.
Oh, yeah.
just dressed with good oil and fresh herbs. And
yeah, and I want to put buttered noodles on the table, too. That's another thing that's very sort of Pennsylvania Dutch.
I was going to say your family really is from
New
York, Pennsylvania.
I know. I mean, I just love buttered noodles. That was one of those things.
I want to make gnocchi. You want to make buttered noodles.
Yeah. Well, my mother never made gnocchi, that's for sure. She was a very good cook, but there were no Italian influences on her cooking. It was all Pennsylvania Dutch, which I'm thankful for. I'm glad I was raised that way. But buttered noodles. I love porcini mushrooms. They're just amazing. And, you know, with porcinis, you know, you want a clean kitchen towel, dampen it.
Clean.
They're not the most fun to...
Porcini equals you better be fussy about how clean they are.
Yeah, because you really need to peel the stem. So you need a little paring knife and just, you know, lose as little as possible. But peel that stem and the cap, just use a damp, clean kitchen towel and just keep rubbing it until you don't see dirt coming off. Look at the gills. You may have to scrape some of them off or all of them off. They need to be, you know, not turning yellow. And the other thing is you can have, you know, some
worms.
Bugs. I hate to say the word
worms,
but
bugs.
Yeah, so you have to watch out for that. But just clean them up well and slice them.
And you got
to
dig them out of there.
Yeah, or throw them away. I don't. Let's
riddled,
not talk about it.
If they're riddled, you don't want them.
No, if they're riddled, you're not eating them. So just clean them up and slice them and saute them gently. And you really want to try to cut them where they keep their stem attached to the cap, which is not the easiest thing in the world because the stem and the cap try to detach when you're cutting. So, porcinis are one of the best, and I love porcini risotto. I mean, they have just this amazing flavor, and it really perfumes dishes.
As long as someone like you knows how to get flavor from those mushrooms first, then when you make risotto with the mushrooms, then you really get something going.
Mm-hmm. You have to work the water content out of any mushroom, and that's the whole ball game.
Well, when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine, a little more autumn food and a couple of wine picks for the fall season. On Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.